Good to have everyone out. Certainly want to be in prayer for Pastor Matthew and his family. If I understand right, the kids got to see snow. So I guess they're way up there, up on the lake in Ohio there. So they got to see snow after all. So we'll be in prayer for them. Just a couple of announcements this evening. We will have communion on Sunday. And then next week, the Word of Life Club will resume, and a Good News Club on Thursday as well. And of course, we'll have prayer time at the end, and want to remember to pray for those things, for our youth ministries and for Good News Club. And we do have a word of praise and thanks. Dan Greer was appointed to the, intermediate court. So we're really excited and praise the Lord for that, for him, and want to be in prayer for him and our other leaders as well. And we would do our prayer time at the end. So this evening, I'd like to give a preview of what we're going to be doing in our Bible studies at the Capitol coming up for the session. The session begins on January 12th, runs for 60 days. We'll be doing at least two Bible studies on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and Thursdays at noon. We already have our conference rooms lined up, and but would very much encourage you to pray for our leaders, as we should be regularly, but also just pray for our ministry. Things were kind of in a shutdown and a lull for this past year, and so we're excited to be back in the Capitol this year. So be praying for that. And we're going to be studying the minor prophet Habakkuk. And so I'm still in the middle of studying, so tonight's kind of a preview that not fully finished and ready yet. I got a neat mug for Christmas, and actually it's become one of my favorites, and actually my wife says, you don't need any more mugs. I got a cabinet full of them, and I don't know if you can read it or not, but it says, I can do all things through a verse taken out of context. And so, of course, it refers to Philippians 4:13, and it will very often, you'll see it used out of context. You know, an athlete, will be attempting, some win in a playoff or something, and you might have their, it's one of the ones, the football players right under their, right on their eye black or something. But verses out of context are very interesting. Of course, Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. It's a great verse. And there are principles there that can be applied to other areas of life. But if you read the context is Paul says, I've learned the secret to being content in having much or having little. I've learned the secret, and the secret is I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. So the context is dealing with poverty and contentment and those things. There's a couple of other verses out of context that are some of my favorites. I guess one of my all-time favorites in that, I can't believe that they did this. Did you know God has a sense of humor? God has a sense of humor. And I heard the preacher use this verse, and it says, some people get upset if a preacher tells jokes or tells funny stories, but God has a sense of humor. And his reference was Psalm chapter 2. And you're probably familiar with that. The out of context part is God laughs. And so that's what he said. See, it's okay to tell, and it may not be wrong to tell funny stories or tell jokes, but his proof text for that was God laughs. But if you know the context, why do the nations rage and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us. These are people in rebellion against God. And then the psalmist goes on and says, he, God, who sits in the heavens, laughs. The Lord holds them in derision. Then he will speak to them in his wrath. So in the context there, it's probably not the best verse to use to say, well, God has a sense of humor. Yeah, God laughs, but it's not that kind of laugh. And in Habakkuk, if you want to turn there, we find one of the other verses that's been my favorites of being used out of context. And I guess it's kind of a funny story about Habakkuk. The very first time I preached, I think it was the first time I ever spoke in public, preached in public, was at Cross Lanes Bible Church. And we did the preacher boy, Bob Jones liked to call them preacher boys. So did the preacher boy contest. And I was in that in that contest, and don't have a clue, remember what the sermon was about, but I used a verse out of Habakkuk. And Pastor Jim Efall came to me afterwards and said, it's an okay message. We need to work on some stuff. And you might want to pronounce that Habakkuk, not Habakkuk. So it was a little bit embarrassing. And so that's whenever I think of the minor prophet Habakkuk. We were joking about it today. We met some guys for coffee and said, well, they were from southern Judah. That's how the southern folks say it, you know. But if you look at the prophet Habakkuk, tonight we're going to try to deal with and answer the question that's up on the screen. What in the world is God doing? And you can take that a couple of different ways. It might be a sense of dismay. What in the world is God doing? Or it might be, as Habakkuk wants us to look at and see, what in the world is God doing? And that's what we want to look at this evening. Just a little bit of background. Habakkuk was a prophet who was struggling with some questions. I think, Jeff, you did, how long ago was it you did Habakkuk? I think we're down in the fellowship hall, so it's been quite a while. But Habakkuk is looking at what's going on around him in his culture, in his society, in his nation, and he's wondering, what is going on? And his questions are, God, how can you let... Matter of fact, let's just go ahead and read, if you're with me there, in Habakkuk. The oracle or the message that Habakkuk, the prophet, saw. And here's his question, Habakkuk's complaint. Oh Lord, how long shall I cry for help? And you will not hear. I spent a little bit of time just going through the different verses, several of them in Psalms, but how often do you see, how long? And that's what he asked. How long shall I cry for help and you will not hear? Or cry to you violence and you will not save? Why do you make me see iniquity? And why do you idly look at wrong? Destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise. So the law is paralyzed and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous. So justice goes forth perverted. So Habakkuk's looking around his world and seeing all the evil and the wickedness and the stuff that's going on. And he's saying, how long, O Lord? I'm praying, I'm crying out that you'll do something. How long before you do something? Now, here's the out-of-context verse. Again, one of my favorites. Heard a preacher use this. God's answer. God answered Habakkuk. He said, look among the nations and see. Wonder and be astounded. For I am doing a work in your days that you would not believe if told. So the preacher just stopped right there and said, God's going to do something in our church. God's going to do something in your life that you wouldn't believe if we told you. That's not exactly the message that God has here for Habakkuk. He says, behold, I am raising up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation. And the rest of that section goes on to describe how powerful and evil and wicked the Chaldeans are. But God says, you watch, I'm raising up these Chaldeans to come in and punish and discipline the nation of Judah. And Habakkuk hears that and he says, that's not exactly what I had in mind. And he comes on with his second complaint in verse 12. And he recognizes God's power and his holiness and his glory. He says, are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. You've ordained them as a judgment, and you, O Rock, have established them for reproof. But he goes on to say, how can you use this wicked people to judge your people? How can you do that, God? And so Habakkuk questions, and then God again gives him the answer and says, yes, I'm going to discipline the nation of Judah. I'm going to discipline you, your people. But then I'm going to discipline. No, I'm not going to discipline. I'm going to judge the Chaldeans. This is what's going to happen to those nations who are in rebellion against God. They will be defeated. They will be destroyed. I encourage you to get a chance. It's not a very long book. Just go ahead and take a chance to read it. And so Habakkuk has his questions, and God has his answers there in chapter 2. And then chapter 3 is just an amazing song, poem that Habakkuk writes, recognizing God's glory, God's holiness, and God's power. So that's just a little bit of an overview. Of course, we know that Habakkuk, we call them minor prophets. It's not minor because they're unimportant. Actually, this is just, I just thought, what a message this would be for folks at the Capitol who are dealing with the things going on in our world around us and the challenges and the struggles. And I thought it would be an encouragement to us this evening. Always like reading different guys. Here's what some other guys, actually, Martin Lloyd-Jones wrote a little book about it that I'm using. And his title for that is From Fear to Faith. And so that's what you see with Habakkuk. From Fear to Faith. Warren Wiersbe wrote another little book. I'm waiting on it to come in the mail. And his book is From Worry to Worship. And so that's what you see. Chapter 1, chapter 2 is worry. Chapter 3, the song that Habakkuk writes, is worship. And then another writer talked about it. He called it From Sighing, say that, to Singing. And I thought just both those all three of those descriptions just give us really the boils down the message of Habakkuk. And so I hope this evening, just as we share this, that it's an encouragement to us as we look at the world around us. If you go back to chapter 1, you can read Habakkuk's description of what's going on in the nation of Judah. He says there is iniquity, there's wrong. He says destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise. So the law is paralyzed. Justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous. So justice goes forth perverted. We as believers can stop and look around at what's going on in our nation. And that's a pretty good description of what we see. Now, we have to sort out here and really keep track. The United States of America is not God's people. The United States of America is not God's nation. Okay? Who are God's people today? Who is God's people? Well, Israel, yes. But let's get closer to home. Who's God's people today? We are believers and the church. And so as we read Habakkuk, we don't want to make the mistake of taking what he says about the nation of Israel and kind of apply that to America. Yes, we look at our country and we see all the terrible things that are going on around us. But the people of God is us, is the church. And so as we look at this message, we'd have to ask ourselves, you know, what's going on in God's people? What's going on in the church? And we'll talk about that in just a little bit. But here's just what I want us to do is kind of get the big picture. And our first study is going to be, that we're doing at the Capitol, is just getting the big picture of what in the world is God doing? It's the big picture of all that's taking place around us and how it fits together. So it's the big picture. One writer called it, it's the problem of history. So as you look back across history and see all the evil and all the wickedness and all that's transpired, how can God, a holy, good God, allow such things to happen? Martin Lloyd-Jones says we need to keep in mind the Bible is not just a book of personal salvation and Christian living. So, you know, we can take the Bible and look for 10 principles to, you know, be a better husband or a better wife or those kinds of things. It has those things in it, but it's not just a book of personal salvation and Christian living. The main message of the Bible concerns the condition of the entire world and its destiny. So it's just a matter of stopping and getting the big picture. And I think that's one of the things that Habakkuk, that happens to him as he goes through thinking these things through and hearing from God, is seeing that big picture. So here's just three kind of overriding truths that we want to draw from Habakkuk this evening. Number one, God works. Anybody know the rest of that saying? God works in mysterious ways. And actually, we're going to have the song at the end. That phrase actually comes from a song or a poem written. We'll talk about that when we come to the end of it. But God works in mysterious ways. One of those things is his seeming absence and inactivity. Because what's Habakkuk's question? Oh, Lord, how long shall I cry for help and you will not hear? All right, now we have to ask some questions there. Did God hear Habakkuk? Yeah, God heard him. How long will you hear? Or as I cry to you, violence, and you will not save. So apparently, seemingly, God was not present, or God was not hearing, God was not listening. And so we have to answer that question. What is God up to? What is God doing? And God gives Habakkuk the answer. I'm at work. It's happening over a period of time, but I am raising up a people that will discipline my people. And there's a difference between judgment and discipline. We'll talk about that more in a second. So he works in mysterious ways. Sometimes it seems as if he's absent or he's inactive. And then we have the second way he works in mysterious ways. We have unexpected providence. So providence is how God works all things together to accomplish his purpose and his will. All right. Romans 8:28 was some of our favorite. God works all things together for good to those that love God and are called according to his purpose. That's providence. God works. Sometimes we'll call them miracles. Most often it's not a miraculous thing where God overrides nature or science in some way, but it's God amazingly working circumstances or events or through other people to bring about his purpose in our lives. So we think about God's providence and how he works. Here's three truths that we want to take from Habakkuk. And we could go and read through and pick these up in the different passages, but I just want to share them with you quickly. Number one, all history is under God's control. Everything that happens is under God's control. So let's make it practical. All the things that we face in our personal lives that are taking place, they're under God's control. Is COVID under God's control? Okay, where did it come from? I don't know. You know, was it a bioweapon from a lab in China that was released on purpose? I don't know. You know, I mean, we could hear all the, but when you boil it all down, all these circumstances that we individually and as families and as a state and a nation have faced, all history, COVID, is under God's control. Secondly, we think about God's unexpected providence. All history follows God's plan. God has a purpose. God has a plan. And so all history follows God's plan. And then thirdly, we think about God's unexpected providence. All history follows God's schedule. All right, you can see that in chapter 2, verse 3, as God's sharing with him about these things that are taking place to Habakkuk. He says, "For still the vision awaits its appointed time. It hastens to the end. It will not lie. If it seems slow, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay." And so God's saying, here's this message of discipline for God's people of Judah, and here's God's message of judgment upon nations like the Chaldeans. And God says, it's going to take place. You may have to wait, but it is following my time and my schedule. And that's something that we probably struggle with. You know, Habakkuk struggled with it. God, I'm praying. Why aren't you doing something? And God says, I am. Just not yet. But it's coming. It's happening. It's going to happen. So all history is under God's control. All history follows God's plan. All history follows God's schedule. Boy, if we take those to heart, how will that encourage us, or how will that help us? So we'll go to number two, just the big pictures we're getting out of Habakkuk here. Number one was God works in mysterious ways, ways that we may not understand. Number two, God will discipline his people and he will judge unbelievers and the nations. All right, so if we put ourselves in the book of Habakkuk, it's not putting America there, okay? It's putting us as individual believers. It's putting the church. So God will discipline his people. Discipline may be a negative thing, and I guess we would call that a punishment. It's not a judgment. Our sin's already been judged on the cross. Our sin's already been punished on the cross. It's done. It's cared for. But God will what? Discipline his children to make us more like Christ. So God will discipline his people. And he'll discipline us collectively too as a church. Made me think about the churches in Revelation. What did God say? He says, I've got some things against you all. And what could be one of the results is I'm not exactly sure what it meant. God said, I'll remove the lampstand from you. So does that mean a church, like an individual church, like Spring Hill Baptist Church, would cease to function or cease to exist? Or God says, hey, I'm just going to remove my light, my power, and you'll just be kind of a, you know, a little country club of folks meeting on Sundays. And that would be a sad thing. But God says, I'm going to discipline my people. And so that could be us as a church. It could be us as individuals. So we think about this message of Habakkuk. Could it be that God is raising up enemies of the church, folks that hate God and hate Christ and hate the gospel and hate God's standards? Could it be that he's raising up those folks who are going to persecute us as believers and the church in order to purify us? There's going to be a lot of folks in churches when the persecution starts coming and say, nah, this isn't for me. I'm out of here. And what's going to be left behind are the believers who are truly have faith in Christ and seek to follow him. But God's going to discipline his people. God severely disciplined the people of Judah because of their idolatry and because of their wickedness. One of the discouraging things sometimes for me is to look at what's going on in the church around us, you know, evangelical churches and all and things. But boy, I got to stop and look at my own life. So what are the areas in my own life that I have to beware of God's discipline to come? And then we see that God's going to judge the unbelievers and the nations. If you want to make a note, I was going to turn there, but just to save time, Psalm 73 was written by a fellow named Asaph. And it shares very much the same. Actually, it's almost like Psalm 73 gives us a little more detail into the personal struggle that Habakkuk may well have been going through. I'll read a little bit of it if you're there with me. But just make a note, if you have a chance, read Psalm 73. This is what Asaph wrote. It says, "Truly God is good to Israel, to those who are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet had almost stumbled, and my steps had nearly slipped. For I was envious of the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked." So you see, Asaph's got some of the same questions. What, God, how come these wicked people are prospering and I'm not? What's going on, Lord? And then he describes the wicked people. They have no pangs until death. Their bodies are fat and sleek. They're not in trouble as others are. They are not stricken like the rest of mankind. Pride is their necklace. Violence covers them as a garment. Their eyes swell out through fatness. Their hearts overflow with follies. And so he goes on to describe that, and he says, my feet had almost slipped. I had almost fallen. I almost turned my back on God because of this. But verse 16 says, when I thought how to understand this. So you see, I mean, it's just like Habakkuk's struggle. He's trying to understand it. God, what are you doing? God's what's going on? But when I thought how to understand this, it seemed to me a wearisome task until I went into the sanctuary of God, and then I discerned their end. So he had his eyes on what was going on around him immediately. But it's, basically he says, I went to church. I went to the sanctuary of God, and I got the big picture. And I saw God's holiness, and I saw their wickedness, and I understood this is what's going to happen to them. God is going to lay them out and destroy them and judge them. And at the end, he says, I'm praising the Lord. I almost slipped and fell, but and I kind of like that. He says, I went to church. We don't really see it in Habakkuk, but I think we see it in Psalm 73. What can be one of the greatest encouraging things we can do is to come to church. If we're struggling with these questions, struggling with God, what are you doing in this world? What's going on? What's going on in my life? I've got family stuff. I've got all this going on, and I'm discouraged, and I'm almost ready to slip and fall. What's better than to come and be with our brothers and sisters who can lift us up and encourage us? I hope it's not reading too much into it. Probably is Habakkuk, but if you go to Psalm 73, I think that truth is there. So remember, God will discipline His people. So the stuff that we see going on around us may very well be that God is raising things up, bringing things in to discipline us. Again, that could be a negative thing, like a punishment, like we might punish our kids. Hopefully we discipline our kids. It's not out of just anger, but it's, hey, I want you to learn. I want you to change. I want you to grow. And that's what God is going to do with us. And then keep the big picture. God's going to judge. So it's easy for us to just get angry with what's going on around us when we hear politicians say what they say or do what they do, or if Christians being persecuted, all these things. But we keep a big picture. If they seem to be successful, this is the best it's ever going to get for them. The end's going to be bad. And so that's something to remember and keep in mind that'll encourage us. So God works in mysterious ways. God will discipline His people and judge believers and nations. And then lastly, what's our response? That's what we see from Habakkuk. We need to see God's holiness and glory and trust His word. And that's what you see in chapter 3 of Habakkuk, is Habakkuk's song of praise and worship to the Lord. If you look at verse 2, O Lord, I have heard the report of you and your work. O Lord, do I fear. In the midst of the years, revive it. In the midst of years, make it known. In wrath, remember mercy. And then he goes on to give really some Old Testament examples of God working in His people, in the nation of Israel. But I want us to look at verse 17 and his closing. And this is a powerful statement that Habakkuk closes with. And I would just ask, could this be our statement of our faith and belief and worship of God? And this is what Habakkuk writes. Though the fig tree should not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, the produce of the olive fail, and the fields yield no food, the flock be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls. Now, everything goes away. Everything falls apart. Everything is bad. It's all gone. Verse 18, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will take joy in the God of my salvation. God, the Lord, is my strength. He makes my feet like the deer's. He makes me tread on my high places. And then he says, we're going to sing this in church. So he gives an instruction to the choir master with stringed instruments. But what a powerful statement. If God took everything away from us, would we still worship him? Is Jesus enough? And I think that's the message this evening. So we need to just see God's holiness and his glory and trust in his word. We didn't start out with a song. Actually, we're going to close with a song, but I'm not going to try to lead it or sing it. And it's actually the song, the poem that God moves in a mysterious way. I've probably shared with you all a lot about John Newton and all the hymns that he had written, hundreds of hymns that he wrote. He actually teamed up with a guy named William Cooper, who was a poet. Cooper struggled mightily with depression. I guess most today would probably call it mental illness, probably almost insanity. And John Newton yoked William Cooper into writing hymns with him together that they were collecting, and it was the only hymnal. And these were hymns to be sung in the church at Olney, and where John Newton was pastor. And so this is actually not, don't start it quite yet. This is a song by William Cooper, all right? And some of the other songs you might be familiar with that he wrote, there is a fountain filled with blood drawn from Emmanuel's veins. That's William Cooper. And I think about the struggles and the challenges and the trials he had. He never got over them. He kind of walked away from the church and from John Newton, and but John Newton still kept contact with him and preached his funeral. And so I think about, kind of a challenge to think of Cooper writing these words and yet struggling. But Newton wanted to help him, to encourage him. He was a great poet, I guess. I'm not into poetry, but Cooper was a fairly well-known poet. And so Newton wanted him to write these hymns with great gospel truth in them. So anyway, we're just going to play that. It's just an arrangement. It's a current arrangement of it. And I thought you might find it encouraging. The words are up there.
God moves in a mysterious way. His wonders to perform. He plants his footsteps in the sea and rides upon the sovereign will. So
Ditty for about 2 minutes after that, so we'll bring it down there. I just thought it was very encouraging words to that song. A little chorus was added, but Lord, we trust in you, and we think of how he works. And I guess the verse that strikes me, judge not the Lord by feeble sense. That's, we look around us, see what's going on, but trust him for his grace. Behind a frowning providence, he hides a smiling face. And God, we trust in you. That was the message Habakkuk figured out, and he wrote it down for us. And so as we go into looking at what's going on around us and maybe becoming discouraged, oh, I knew Dan was going to get under conviction there. So, no, he told me he had to leave for a meeting. As we look at what's going on around us, not just to use our senses, but get that big picture. God's in control. In control of all history, has a purpose, has a plan, and he has a timetable. We, you know, Habakkuk was blessed. He got a glimpse of it. Okay, now I understand a little better. We don't always have that privilege of having that glance of this is what God's doing. And so we ask ourselves, what is God trying to teach me? What do I need to learn? So I hope that's encouraging to you this evening. We'll just add that as one of our prayer requests is the ministry at the State House coming up. Be praying. One of the lessons is going to be on God's judgment. And so, you know, just thinking through, praying through how to effectively share that. So losing elections, not the worst thing that can happen to you. All right. It's not knowing the Lord and facing the. So anyway, that's just something you could be praying for. I think I might have an opportunity to share a little bit more about ministry and what's going on. So we do have our prayer list to look at, and we'll go ahead and spend a few minutes in prayer.